Flying Talkers podcast brought to you today by your friends at Pay Cargo, the better way to pay and to save time and money. You see, Pay Cargo has a better idea. By simplifying the payment process to more than 3,000 vendors, cargo moves faster. Pay Cargo saves you time and money by expediting important data and funds to ensure rapid release of your cargo. Maybe best of all, you get the time to build your business assured that the Pay Cargo team is with you, providing trackable, tangible results every step of the way. So why wonder why most shipments in the Pay Cargo system get released in as little as 1 hour? Go to www.paycargo.com and explore a whole new way to pay and get paid. Pay Cargo offers flexible payment options and also available credit lines. And as the number one online platform in the world for cargo payments, www.paycargo.com can offer you a level of service, financial expertise, and connectivity that makes it easy to ship, click, and pay. So go to www.paycargo.com and get the rest of the story. Discover how Pay Cargo simplifies a better way to pay and get paid. And tell them Flying Talkers sent you. That's www.paycargo.com. Great people to do business with. This is Jeffrey Arendt, and welcome to 2023 and Flying Typers. We're glad to have you back. I'd like to tell you a story about someone we lost in December, on December 16th, Bill Spohr. Must have been about 20 years ago, maybe a bit more, that I got together with my friend Ron Davies, or R.E.G. Davies, the most famous aviation historian in the world, sat in the Lindbergh chair at the National Air and Space Museum, wrote 38 books for the Smithsonian Press. But we got together. I wanted to do some books on people, inexpensive books to tell the story of air cargo, because of course, air cargo was where you put 2 people out of 10 that scored the lowest in terms of your marketability if you were an airline or if you were doing some other kind of business. You'd put this guy in the cargo department. Put him in the cargo department. He'll do all right over there. Well, we had a guy in Miami who was really great named Bill Spohr, and I wanted to include him in a book I was writing on the history of Miami Airport. I loved Miami Airport. I knew John Paul Riddle. I knew George Batchelor. I knew a lot of these guys that were out at the field that were characters for sure in their own right, but they were also people that were doing things that were remarkable. Bill Spohr, very quiet, very under the radar, was somebody who helped develop and build Miami International Airport into what it is today. He was the first president of modern TIAA. He's the guy most responsible for bringing it back. He was also one of the formers of Air Cargo Americas. His backing meant that Air Cargo Americas became a trade show. He did a lot of wonderful things. And I want to share something that the greatest aviation historian, Ron Davies, wrote about Bill Spohr, wrote it for me, and we published it in a book we did on the history of Miami Airport back in, must have been about 25 years ago. So here it is. It's called Gentleman Bill. The president of Challenge Air Cargo, definitely making money from transporting air cargo exclusively on scheduled routes when almost all of those who have tried have fallen by the wayside. Even respected names such as Flying Tigers and Seaboard World. There's not as many would expect a feisty and aggressive entrepreneur given to the colorful language and flamboyant gestures that seem to be characteristics of many of the airline leaders. Quite the opposite, Bill Spohr, as he is known to one and all, is a mild-mannered, almost unassuming, articulate gentleman, a term that has to be used with care these days, whose vast experience in adventuring and traveling, coupled with cosmopolitan background in business and multilingual ease of communication, combined to fashion a personality of rare quality. Unlike many career aviation people, Bill Spohr was not particularly enamored with airplanes in his early life. He did not become actively involved until the age of 32, and that was more by accident than design. Several accidents, in fact. The first was meeting a young lady in Mexico City who was the daughter of one of the most remarkable men who ever organized and operated airlines, C.N. Shelton. The second was meeting Eugene Fodor of International Travel Guide fame in Paris, which led to working as one of Fodor's specialist writers and living in Buenos Aires. Here, the hand of fate seems to have taken over. Bill became a close friend of Lowell Xerox, the New Zealander who had built the great Taka Airline conglomerate in Central America in the 1940s and was now in retirement in the Argentine capital. Though Bill could not have consciously set about preparing himself for a career in air transport, he certainly acquired all the qualifications for doing so, both in academic versatility and in practical experience, and not only surviving, but in succeeding in many fields of commercial activity, not to mention enterprising adventure. Bill is an educated man in every sense, a definition of that often abused word. Born on the 23rd of June in 1931 in Ponca City, Oklahoma, from farming stock whose forebears had emigrated from Germany in 1851, Bill Spohr seems to have been a late starter, attending public school in Drummond, Oklahoma, until the 12th grade, from which he graduated in the top 10. But Bill explains disarmingly that there were only 10 people in the class. Such modesty is deceptive. He subsequently attended the University of Oklahoma at Norman and obtained a bachelor's degree in journalism. He was president of the senior class, editor of the university newspaper, and an alumnus of Phi Beta Kappa. In 1953, Bill Spohr was awarded a Fulbright scholarship for overseas study, just failing to make the grade for an even more prestigious Rhodes scholarship, but still able to go to the University of Grenoble, where he studied political science and history, at the same time picking up a good working knowledge of the French language. In 1954, he went to the Army as a second lieutenant, a status earned through the ROTC at Norman, and was assigned to Fort Lee, Virginia as a protocol officer. He was bored stiff. In desperation and showing early signs of initiative that were to be successfully repeated in later years, Bill Spohr went to the Pentagon in Washington, where he proceeded to knock upon countless doors in search of a better way to serve his time with the military. After the umpteenth knock, Bill Spohr was challenged by a major who demanded four essential qualifications for a post. The candidate had to be single, a lieutenant, and able to speak French, and to have experience in protocol affairs. Lieutenant B.F. Spohr had precisely these attributes, and within weeks, he was on his way to Vietnam in a naval constellation to become an aide-de-camp of the Deputy Commander General of the MAAG, Military Assistance Advisory Group, which the United States had established to advise the South Vietnamese after the partitioning of the country, followed by the disastrous defeat of the French fortress at Dien Bien Phu. During this lull in the storm of the Second Vietnamese War, Bill admits to have had a great time, dressed in his white shark skin suit and playing the role of an adventurous diplomat liaison officer with the French. Returning to the States after his tour of duty in Vietnam, he met during the summer of 1956 at the University of Oklahoma, the Hungarian archaeologist Baron Stefan Borhegi, who invited him to join an expedition to Guatemala to do some excavation into Maya sites. There he spent 3 months partly with the expedition and partly learning Spanish at the San Carlos University. He also met Miss Patricia Shelton, the daughter of the legendary Shelton, who was visiting her mother, family, and their coffee plantation in Cobah. When Bill returned to Washington for a short spell with the Department of Defense, he maintained contact with Patricia, and this may have influenced his decision to quit the bureaucracy, drive to Mexico City in a 1952 Ford, and enroll at the National University of Mexico for courses in Middle American history and archaeology. Patricia and her mother came to live in Mexico City also. By this time, Bill Spohr had decided that he was tired of starving, wanted to get married, and needed to make some money. The first of these three requirements came about because the funds from the GI Bill had run out, and the second was accomplished at Coban in July 28, 1960, on which occasion, to see his daughter into wedlock, Shelton turned up in top hat and tails, which caused more comment than the event itself, and the third, after a honeymoon in Acapulco, brought about by recourse to the abilities in writing at which he had done well at the University of Oklahoma. As usual, Bill was always seemed to be in the right place at the right time. Some would call this luck. Others would point to the good definition of luck when opportunity comes face to face with preparation. We'll have some more in just a moment. As we continue, our salute to Bill Spohr, who we lost in December at age 91. I want to share with you one of the more colorful people in a world full of very colorful people that I've known in cargo business. We were talking about how he was moving through his life as told by Ron Davies, the most important aviation historian in the history of flight, the most prolific, the most generous, and a man that served in Washington at the National Air and Space Museum for 50 years. And Ron was remembering that Bill, as with his protocol aide-de-camp posting to Vietnam, had the right credentials when he met in Paris Eugene Fodor, the Hungarian publisher of the world-famous guidebooks. His intimate knowledge of Latin America, that's Bill's, his Spanish language fluency, and his eagerness for creative writing based on research led him to an appointment as Fodor's resident agent in Buenos Aires, charged with the responsibility of producing a new Fodor guide for the continent. Bill traveled the length and breadth of South America, researching, collating, and writing. His father-in-law, C.N. Shelton, often came to stay, visiting from his home in Miami. His wife, Patricia, became the vice president for Honduras and Argentina. She'd been born in Tegucigalpa. Sheldon was operating a successful Barefoot Airlines in Honduras, Ecuador, Peru, offering cheap fares in competition with Panagra, the U.S. flag carrier, and tried to recruit Bill to work for his organization. Bill must have been tempted, for he spent many hours in the Hurlingham Club, a little piece of England overseas, where Lowell Yerkes, who once fired Sheldon from TACA, had almost taken up residence, and where Bill would metaphorically sit at the old master's feet, listening to tales of airline pioneering the Ford Tri-Motors in the jungles, and becoming further addicted to the drug, which is a fascination with airlines, especially those off the beaten track of the jet set. Eventually, Shelton's persuasion had its effect and Bill Spohr left Fodor in 1963 to become the director of planning for OPSA, Shelton's Peruvian airline based in Lima. 2 years later, by which time Bill was OPSA's U.S. manager and managing director of the Honduras TAN, Shelton died, leaving his estate to his children. But his only real asset was a stake in TAN, which was auctioned off at Miami. Bill and Panagra borrowed enough money to buy the TAN stock for $1.5 million and then spent 10 years paying back the loan. Bill dabbled a little in Florida aviation affairs, was founding president of Air Florida in 1971, and organized the General Air Services Maintenance Company. But he seems to have become disenchanted with the airline business at that time and sold TAN to the president of Honduras in 1975 for $3 million. Bill's spirit of aviation and instinctive wanderlust now took over, strongly spiced with the love of archaeology that he had acquired in Mexico and during his wanderings on behalf of Fodor. He had been especially intrigued with the mysterious lines in the desert at Nazca in Peru, first discovered in 1939, and which have been described as the largest work of art in the world. Today's Flying Talkers is brought to you by Colli Logistics. When it comes to keeping things moving, it's Colli, by golly. The global air cargo industry is a sunrise sector. You don't believe that? Look out at the ramp. There are thousands of airplanes carrying nothing but air cargo these days, where in past years it was in the belly, or maybe it wasn't there at all. The volume of air cargo being moved is ever increasing, and airports are finding it difficult to keep pace with expansion in terms of infrastructure, workforce, and level of automation. An end-to-end web-based air freight software or an air cargo management system can assist cargo terminal operators to address these issues. At Colli Logistics Solutions, we understand these issues well and constantly strive to provide solutions that can address these problems, promising improvement and efficiency of the operation, as well as increasing bottom-line results. Colli Logistics Solutions' suite of air freight software solutions to address the challenges of air cargo stakeholders have stemmed from working alongside leading airports, including Atlanta, Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, and other locations around the world, gaining in-depth understanding of the challenges and opportunities that define the air cargo domain. Colli's flagship air cargo management system provides state-of-the-art technology for modernization and streamlining of air cargo operations that could assist all stakeholders in overcoming the challenges. It's Colli, by golly. He had been especially intrigued with the mysterious lines in the desert at Nazca in Peru, first discovered in 1939, and which have been described as the largest work of art in the world. Composed of enormous figures, mainly of birds scattered randomly, but joined by long lines, at least as straight as could be surveyed and constructed with precision today, They were laid out by civilization some 2,000 years ago. The most plausible explanation of their accurate delineation is that they were checked out by balloon. And Bill Sporer set out to test the theory with a matching deed, teaming up with a fellow adventurer, Jim Woodman. They set out to prove that the ancient people of Nazca could have made a practical balloon using local materials, a theory supported by the discovery of original Nazca fabric that was a finer weave than used by balloonists today. But the primitive balloon voyage of short duration and almost a disaster did prove that a smoke-filled, i.e. hot air balloon, could have been made and could have been flown. The next year, 1976, found the Sporer-Woodman team on the exploration trail once again, this time in the impenetrable Mosquito Coast of Honduras, where in the snake-infested jungles, rumors of the lost city were challenged by any self-respecting adventure. They raised money from a local U.S. corporation in the area, enough to lease a helicopter and to explore the region to the east and to the south of the Pantuca River, but found only fragmentary traces of what might have yet be the ruins of another lost civilization. After this two-year romance with the unknown, Bill also flew dangerously across the Andes in a balloon from Chile, overflying Mount Aconcagua, highest peak in the Western Hemisphere, and landing in Tupungato near Mendoza, Argentina. Then it was back to business. This time, Nicaragua was the site for the Sporer aspirations, and he became president and CEO of that country's national airline, Lancia, which was under the control of the ruling Somoza family and formally received financial support from Howard Hughes. Bill reviewed the fortunes of the airline and had an option to purchase a 25% interest, but this venture evaporated 3 years later when the Sandinistas kicked the Somoza regime out of Nicaragua. After a spell of aviation consultant, Bill was back in the airline world again. In 1981, he and partner Michael DeBakey bought a small non-scheduled carrier called Challenge Air Transport, one of the many such operators based in Miami, which had been founded 3 years previously. When Bill took over Challenge, they had four piston aircraft, two DC-6B and two C-46s. The first step to improve Challenge's fortunes was to begin a scheduled service to Latin America points, mainly into countries with which had been closely associated with Peru and Honduras. The name was also changed and the operation split between cargo and passenger service, but in 1985, Bill abandoned the passenger portion and concentrated consolidating Challenge air cargo, operating a 707 and a Douglas DC-8-63, all freighters. The airline prospered unspectacularly but steadily, and in 1989, Bill took a major step in fleet modernization by leasing the first Boeing 757-200F twin all freighter. In fact, it was the first all freighter version of the type to go into service anywhere, able to carry more than 40 tons of freight in 15 pallets in all, as Bill Sporer stresses, on two reliable Rolls-Royce engines. At one point, Challenge operated three of the 757s, added a fourth, and in 1992, its revenues exceeded $80 million with service to 15 cities and 12 Latin American countries, and the top volume international air cargo carrier it was out of Miami. Challenge was showing the way. Bill was the complete, all the excitement and anticipation of what he was doing, he brought to Miami, and he was number one. At the base in Miami, a refrigerated warehouse, invariably stacked to the rooftops with pallets and cranes, was controlled 24 hours a day with a computerized tracking system. This was all brandy candy new. Among challenges, 800 people that were working at one point was a team of security people, and he called them his faceless force, that they had created such a template for an all-cargo airline moving perishable goods. It just took off. It was absolutely amazing what it did. Bill's faceless force cost him $500,000, but gave him a legitimacy enjoyed by no other carrier facing the hazards of operating routes into the cocaine countries of Latin America. Challenge Air Cargo continued to expand till eventually, at the age of 62, Bill, always on the move, kept moving the fortunes of Challenge upwards or indulging it into one of his hobbies. He would always be there doing something for an occasional balloon flight or a camel ride or something across the Middle East. He always was doing all kinds of incredible things. He was active on countless local and national committees, a patron of many societies in the aviation fraternity. Bill is nevertheless not an aviation fanatic, as his past record reveals. He's a member of the Explorers Club and a fellow of the Royal Geographic Society of London, neither of which august bodies is noted for easy to obtain membership. He was a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous force in getting Air Cargo America started in Miami and also bringing back TIAACA. TIAACA today is the International Air Cargo Association. I remember when he was there in London at the beginning, when we went to the In-N-Out Club and all the great work that Bill did to bring people together. And I sometimes think, so many of those people that were there at that meeting are now gone. They've gone to some other dimension. They're over on the other side somewhere. I see their faces in front of me these days. Chris Foyle was there. Bill Sporer was there. They were just interesting people at a time when the world was alive. The air cargo landscape was alive with exciting people. No doubt those people are back again in another form and brought down the road a little bit further by people like Bill Sporer. I think it's tremendously important that we as an industry stand up and recall a man like Bill Sporer. He died at Christmastide in 2022, but he left a legacy of accomplishment and excellence and excitement about our business. I'm so grateful to Ron Davies for writing this piece, and Ron's up there somewhere talking to him about these things as well. I mean, this is one thing after another. It's like, wait a minute, guys, you left me down here. I'm enjoying it. I'm talking to a few people, like what we're doing, Mike White, some other people that have appreciated these things. Those guys up at Yellowknife at Buffalo Airways, they're coming with their old airplanes. They've even got a new one now. We got a jet 737. They understand all of these things and love to think about them and develop them and feel that exceptional thrill that the great pioneer people can never get tired of listening to and knowing about. This is Jeffrey Aaron, thanking you for your time, this time until next time. Might have been a little bit long about Bill Sporer, might have been something. We have to remember where we came from to have the real idea of where we're going in the future. It's interesting, this romance we have with the cargo business and this utter joy it is to be part of an industry that's always innovating and trying to do something different to make things better. I was thinking of the other day what a wonderful thing it was that cargo just went the natural next step when the plague hit a couple of years ago, when there was nobody sitting in the seats, and since we had the space, took those seat belts and wrapped them around packages of vaccine to go out and save lives. And as unspectacular as it might have been to start with, I do recall Virgin Atlantic coming out and doing that kind of work. My point is this. They were first, I think, but the point is, whoever was first, we innovated and we found a way. And I think it's a tremendous testimony to the inventiveness and dedication of some people in business. We have to remember the people that do those things so that we can study what it is they did that was truly new and different. So the next time you're at Tiaca, or you're sitting down at Air Cargo Americas later this year, think about Bill Spohr. He was there in the beginning when his support as the biggest cargo airline in Miami really meant something and gave a spark of life to organized cargo. Thanks again for your time. We'll see you next time. Keep them flying, Air Cargo. And Happy New Year, 2023. Goodbye. Flying Talkers, brought to you today by the people of ATC. From Frankfurt, Germany to the world, with offices open everywhere, ATC is the reliable general services and sales agent, GSSA, for top-rated customer satisfaction. If your airline is delivering service excellence, chances are ATC represents them somewhere. There's no secret sauce here. ATC's extraordinary expertise and service ethic harkens back to a time when results-driven cargo executives were the product of a lifetime of best practices and great training. So contact ATC, one world, one great air cargo GSSA. ATC Aviation can be contacted at atc.aviation.com and tell them Flying Talker sent you. That's atc-aviation.com.